This is episode number 119, Data Science Trends for 2018.
Welcome to the Super Data Science Podcast. My name is Kirill Eremenko, data science coach and lifestyle entrepreneur. And each week we bring you inspiring people and ideas to help you build your successful career in data science. Thanks for being here today, and now let's make the complex simple.
Happy New Year, everybody, and welcome to the very first episode of the Super Data Science Podcast for 2018. Very, very excited to have you on board. Super pumped about the beginning of a new year, a new adventure. And we're kicking off the year strong and on an exciting note. So Adlan and I got together to record a webinar like a week ago or so where some of you have actually attended. And we were discussing trends, the trends that are coming up in 2018, what to expect, what to look into in the space of data science. So on this webinar, we discussed topics such as AI, blockchain, data security, self-serve analytics, digital twins, and many, many more. So those are just some of the highlights of what we talked about. Prepare yourself for this exciting adventure, and also note that this webinar is available in a video version. You can find the video at www.superdatascience.com/119, and if you have the opportunity, then it's probably best to watch it that way, but also you will get exactly the same insights from listening to a podcast. And on that note, without further ado, I bring to you the all-time favorite, the incredible Adlan de Pontevez and the trends of 2018. So today we're talking about trends, right? Data science trends. It's a bit like complex to separate tech trends from data science trends, right? Because, you know, they come hand in hand, really. Can't really imagine technology, a lot of types of technology, without the power of data science behind them. And also, you know, data science usually is used to empower certain applications that have some technological aspect to them, right? The ones that are more data science specific, right?
That's right. And anyway, today when I talk about data science, I mostly talk about AI, because, you know, that's the most exciting part, first. And second, data science is being kind of automated by AI, actually. And so that's why the demand for machine learning AI is growing, as the demand for analysts is slightly decreasing its acceleration. So I mostly talk about AI. And actually, we're going to see that the big trends coming in 2018 are all be around AI. Mm. And something more.
Yeah, I'll try to talk less about AI to mix it up, because Adlan is like super passionate about AI He'll be doing most of that. Okay, so we've got Leonid. Thank you very much, Leonid, who is our resident data scientist, has helped us put together a list, and we have two lists actually. We have a list of trends that are predicted to be popular in 2018 and to pick up. And we have a list of trends that were predicted to be popular in 2017. So the way I think we'll structure it is we'll first go over the 2018 ones, see what's coming. And so we make sure we cover them. And if we have time at the end, we'll like review what happened in the previous year and see if how correct those predictions were, what we found there. Sounds good?
Sounds very good.
All right, let's get started. So first trend in 2018, AI foundation. Funnily enough, we're talking about how businesses are going to start more and more using AI more and more. And I'll probably steal the quote here from Andrew Ng that AI is the new electricity. So Adlan, what are your thoughts on that? How are businesses are going to be using AI more and more in 2018, and what are going to be the major developments there?
That's right. So lots of companies have integrated AI into their business process. And actually, have some figures. I think that's around 60% of companies that have already made the move to integrate AI into their system, into their company, into their business process, to optimize the processes, like reduce the cost, or make it an AI-based company. And only around 30 to 40% are starting to think about this, but have not made the real step yet. So definitely, that's a big trend of not 2018, but already in 2017, companies are adopting AI and try to build some AI teams and make it AI optimized. So yes, this is really happening.
Mm. And we talk about the difference between general artificial intelligence and narrow artificial intelligence, right? And in the sense that businesses, like when we say AI, we don't mean that there's like a robot controlling the whole business or anything. It's like very narrow applications, like in, say, in one specific area, in marketing or in operations or in another part of the business, there is an AI added behind
it. And also in the decision making process, you know, they use AI a lot for decision making. It's sometimes the AI that makes the decision because they apply the machinery models on the data, and they get some great visualization tools to help the decision process. And sometimes at the highest level, you know, the executives use AI to help make that decision.
Mm. And so, like, this statistic is very interesting because I was surprised at the 40%. I think it sounds really high that 40% of businesses have already, in some shape or form, started adopting AI. But, like, I guess what that's saying is that it's not across the board, not across the whole business. What are your thoughts on that? Do you think more and more businesses will be adopting AI, not just like in one specific application, because that's what I think it's talking about, that like in one area, there is some sort of AI that they've introduced, and that's how they get the 40% number. That, by the way, guys, if anyone's interested, some of these stats come from the Gartner reports. We can mention where else we get them as we go along. But for example, that stat came from one of Gartner's recent reports. And so do you think, Adlan, that businesses are going to limit themselves to using, to having like one application or two applications of AI across the whole business, or do you think they will like start doing narrow AI in many different spaces?
I think they will just leverage AI. Most of them leverage AI to improve their business, to optimize their business, reduce the cost, and you know, there are a lot of applications that you can use, that you can leverage AI from to improve your business process. So I think that's mostly what's going to happen. And then you have on the side the real AI-based companies that do general artificial intelligence, that do artificial intelligence at the core of their business. But if we were talking about most companies, well, they're definitely starting to leverage AI. I'm mostly thinking of the consulting companies. Each one of them is building a team of data scientists and using AI for, as I said, yeah, decision-making process.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Any other comments on AI and how it's going to lay foundations in business in the coming year?
Well, it can go really far. Like AI can be applied in some fields that are not covered yet today. Because, mm-hmm. you know, when we talk about AI, there are actually a lot of branches of AI. You have computer vision. And so computer vision can be used in many businesses to improve it. You also have deep natural language processing, like what we're doing with the chatbot. And that can help significantly some companies, you know, by bringing some chatbot assistance that can help, you know, the people in the company and that can help navigate or whatever. You also have some other branches like robotics. So robotics can definitely, you know, automate the processes and everything. And you also have those, you know, data robots that can leverage the data automatically and provide some outputs that will be insightful for the decisions you have to make. So there are tons of applications, and there are even some applications that we haven't thought about. So that's definitely going to develop in the coming years.
What's your favorite application? Is there something that pops to mind that you've recently heard of that you're like, wow, that's a really cool application of AI?
I have two in mind. I have augmented reality and blockchain. Blockchain and AI is going to be the big trend in 2018, the combination of both. I actually don't know which one exactly is going to be the new electricity. You know, you said AI is going to be the new electricity, but, you know, when I see blockchain developing and what it's capable of doing and all the things that have, that is happening right now, I have some doubt now what is going to be the real new electricity.
Nice. And that's a good segue for us to get into blockchain. So a blockchain is a shared, distributed, decentralized ledger that helps, basically takes out the middleman, takes out like the bank or the polling system or something, and helps people have trustworthy transactions with each other, secure transactions with each other, even when they don't know each other. So, like, I know you're also very excited about blockchain, and there, I actually watched a TED Talk recently where they're saying that blockchain, as you just mentioned, is going to be the technology that's going to change and shape the world in the coming year, or the coming years, but especially in 2018, we're going to see some major shifts because of blockchain, and that those shifts are actually going to be even bigger than the ones that we're seeing with AI. Yeah, so what are your thoughts on blockchain, and why are you so excited about this technology?
Oh my goodness, it's so disruptive. You know, for example, it could build a new internet, because the fact that it is totally decentralized all over the world makes it extremely powerful at, for example, compressing data. You know, AI and data science is all about compressing data today, so that we can have a faster and faster transfer of data, or faster and faster transactions, and even more secure. And blockchain will play a significant role in that, because since everything is decentralized, and since everything is scripted, and since everything is, you know, well organized into flows that are in such a way that you cannot go back in the flow and modify anything, well, that makes it a super solid, safe, and fast system. And why did I say that it could build a new internet? It's because, you know, since everything is decentralized, we could have each, like, the data divided into very small parts all over the world, and that would make some kind of peer-to-peer compression that would make everything super powerful, like a fast compression, you know, everything decentralized, so that you have some extremely fast transfers around the and extremely fast connections around the globe. And that would be thanks to blockchain. So that could go really, really far. I'm seeing maybe 2 years or 3 years from now, but that could go really, really far. And AI, of course, has a role to has a part to play in that, because AI automates everything. It automates the processes, so it will optimize the process inside the blockchain. And that's why the combination of both these technologies will make something like super powerful.
Mm-hmm. And also, I wanted to mention that a lot of people, and I used to be the same, that when we hear blockchain, we think Bitcoin. When we think Bitcoin, we hear Bitcoin, we think blockchain. But those are not synonymous, right? So Bitcoin is one of the things that leverages blockchain, that is built upon blockchain. And at the same time, blockchain can be used for many other things. I really like the example somebody suggested of using blockchain to do voting. So you know how, like, in the US there were elections and people were voting, and then you, like, go and you submit your vote. And so there's always an organization in the middle, like a big organization that makes sure, like, counts the votes, makes sure everything's safe, that there's no cheating, or there's like everything is accounted for, everything is trustworthy. And that has to be in the middle to ensure trust. That's where blockchain comes in. Blockchain can remove that organization, and basically you could do voting from your computer. And the way blockchain works, like, we're not going to go into detail, well, for me personally, because I'm not an expert in blockchain, not yet, but I really want to get deep into this topic and understand it better, because it's so interesting, so disruptive. But at the same time, like, you take out the organization, you put in blockchain, and what that enables, through the way it's, through the cryptography it has, and through this decentralized and hyper-connected system, what happens is that now all of a sudden it's completely trustworthy. There's a ledger of everything that happens. This ledger is decentralized, distributed across lots of people. Like, you would have to hack like hundreds of thousands of computers at the same time with the highest level of encryption in order to break into that. And that's much harder than to hack into into an organization or something like that. So that's the power of blockchain. And so like voting, for instance, like on during elections, that's a big deal. Imagine like you wouldn't have to get out of your house. You just vote on your laptop and things like that. There are a couple of other applications. Does anything else pop to mind?
Yeah, that's right. You actually raised a very important point, which is actually going to be a massive trend in the coming years. And that trend is security. And AI, as well as blockchain, will have a huge part to play in security. And as you said, blockchains are safe because you need to hack like thousands of computers to hack the system. And for this reason, we're going to definitely leverage blockchain to make some more secure and safe systems. Like, for example, the example you gave about voting or any other ones. Like, the main application of blockchain today is the new money, like Bitcoins, which I actually have doubt it's going to last because, you know, it has the signs of a bubble. But, you know, with this blockchain, we can make a totally decentralized and safe financial system so that, indeed, we improve the security. But that's just an example. The security brought thanks to blockchain can be applied to many other fields. And that's going to be definitely a big trend in the coming years. Blockchain will not only play a part in security, but AI will have to play a part on itself for security because AI is developing pretty fast. And at some point, we will reach some powerful artificial intelligence that will go beyond human capacities. And therefore, we will have to control AI. And that will be another part of this big security trend.
Yeah, I had another thing I heard about blockchain that it can be used for like distributing music. Like there's this one, a couple of people who distribute their music through blockchain. And what that does is like, if you're just a user, you can download it for free and listen to their song and so on. But if you want to use it for like a project and in a movie or in a trailer or inside your own like YouTube video or something like that, then through blockchain, they know that you just get it through blockchain, and that way automatically the transaction happens automatically. So it's again this whole trust thing that nobody's going to get your music, on its own.
And what's crazy is that you don't even have the music on your phone. And that's because it's totally decentralized. You have one part of the music somewhere, another part of the music somewhere else, or you know, sometimes 1,000 kilometers away from each other. And that's the peer-to-peer system, which makes it fast compression, and that allows you to have very quickly the music on your phone without having it literally on your phone. And that's the same for movie compression or streaming. You can leverage blockchain by having some parts all around the decentralized system to, you know, get your streamed movies on your computer. And this will come from all this decentralized system brought by this blockchain technology. So yeah, that's, again, there is the safety component that is really improved by blockchain, but also the speed of the transfer, and also the data compression.
Nice. And so the question I actually had that I was thinking about was, it's really cool to know about blockchain and understand that, oh, cool, you know, how this goes into the foundation of Bitcoin, or this can go into the foundation of voting system or content distribution and so on. But the question is it something that's completely out of reach, or is it something that we can create ourselves? Like, can we just sit down and program a blockchain in Python or something like that? Is it possible?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And we will do it.
We will do it.
Yes, we will do it very quickly.
Awesome. Okay, so there we go. That's our 2 cents on blockchain. Okay, so the other one, it's not in our list right now. It's in our list of stuff for 2017. But since we mentioned it, I think it's an important trend to point out: security, right? So the whole concept of security on the internet and security of data and how that is important, how that is progressing. So I have a few interesting examples. In 2017, we had some major, major security breaches in the world. And that is a huge indication that in 2018, security is going to start growing again. Two major breaches. So WannaCry cyber attack in May 2017. People probably heard about that. Microsoft computers in 50 countries around the world locked down. I think these are because they're using Spear or something like that. From companies like from FedEx to the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Romania were impacted by that. And that was a major thing. So you can, there's like Wikipedia article about it and so on. And that was all over the news. That was a big one. That was May 2017. And just when you think it can't get any worse, one of the biggest attacks in the world's history also happened last year. You might know about a company called Equifax. It's a credit rating company that has about 800 million customers around the world. It's like one of the top three biggest credit rating, just credit agencies in the world. And 143 million customers were affected by the attack. That was that happened last year. It was announced on the 7th of September, I believe. 7th of September, they announced that they had a data breach, but that happened actually ages before that, like months before that. People's first names, last names, addresses, social security numbers, dates of birth, and more information were stolen. And if you think about 143 million people, and there's like 324 million people in the U.S. on its own. So that's 143 million in the U.S. alone that were affected. There were people in Canada, in the U.K. that were affected. So 143 million out of 324, which is the population of the U.S., that's almost 50% of the U.S. population was affected by this attack. How crazy is that? So, and that's just in the U.S. alone. And that just stands to show. And there are like tons of other smaller examples, like the Uber hacking, where they paid the hackers not to say anything. And then chief executives were like, not chief, some executives were fired for that. And other companies as well that we've heard in the news that have fallen victim to attacks. And kind of it's on the verge of different trends. Like data is becoming more and more popular, like more and more all over the place. And the proliferation of data, with the proliferation of data, what's happening is it's harder and harder to keep it safe. It's harder and harder to keep it secure. And then also hackers are getting have access to much more sophisticated tools, not even talking about AI and machine learning, just like even the algorithms and ways they can infiltrate systems are much more sophisticated. So there's a huge threat, and I think that security is going to be a major, major trend in 2018 and onwards, because companies understand the importance of protecting their data and their customers' data. What are your thoughts, Adnan?
That's absolutely right. Customers' data actually already had issues in the past. People were complaining that the data were actually used in some non-ethical ways. And that's because there were some data breach, security breaches. And so, yeah, this is another essential part of the security trend that is coming. We not only need to protect ourselves against powerful AIs, or we not only need to protect us against hacking and everything, but we also need to protect the data. For this, again, yes, blockchain will definitely play a part in that, because since everything is encrypted, that can be a way of protecting the data and in such a way that it would be very difficult to hack it, thanks to the multiple systems decentralized all around the world. So I think we will always have to work on that, because, it's the war of technology. Once you find a technology that can protect your data, well, what comes after that is somebody who has better technology and can break your technology that protects your data. So we're going to have leap over leap. And so the more we will get into some improving technologies, the more we will have to pay attention to the fact that it's going to be difficult to keep up. And we're going to have more and more experts in depth of all the technologies that are protecting the data, and therefore less and less people, because we're going to reach a level of expertise that is going to be very high. And that's another trend that I'm going to. It's that trend, and possibly a danger, but that has to do with security, is that the research on AI and everything is becoming so high level that less and less people manage to get into it at the state of the art. that's a danger, because imagine the state-of-the-art research falls into the wrong guys. Well, you know, the black box will be only understood by the wrong guys. Well, that could be that would lead like the world into some kind of danger. So that's why we not only need to protect the data and develop those technologies, but we need, and that's the most important thing, to educate the world, to teach them how this works, and to teach them how to, and to explain them how the state of the art models work, so that the black box doesn't become that black for too much people.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a great answer, great comment on that. And I'm just checking the questions occasionally. We just had Alper say that, sorry guys, this is cybersecurity. Can we please get to things more related with data science? So I want to respond to that, because I have seen the world of cybersecurity, and I've worked at, through working at Deloitte, I've seen what a market this is. It's a huge, massive area, which is so underrated by data science practitioners, for the reason that we mentioned. One is that any kind of data science that you work that you do is going to can fall victim to cybercrime, but also because it is a branch, or it over intersects with data science. There's so many different data science applications, like the machine learning algorithms that we're learning. They can all be applied in the space of cybersecurity, in the space of data security, because like they're definitely inherent algorithms that are specific. What's that one called? I forgot. But basically, there's a mathematical equation that is specifically used in the space of cybersecurity, at least one that I know of. But all the other algorithms, with the increasing rise of machine learning, AI, deep learning, that is slowly shifting into the space of cybersecurity. And that's what we had witnessed in 2017. We saw the infiltration of deep learning and machine learning in the space of security, that to help find these anomalies, find these possible areas of where things can be breached, and to help mitigate those risks. So I personally think that like data science trends will definitely like cover off as many as we can right now, but one of the biggest trends overall is the one we just talked about. You can see how it's on the intersection of different things like deep data science, AI, and blockchain. Okay, moving on. So next one we have is deep learning technology is becoming mainstream. So we've seen a lot of things happen just recently, from image classification, machine translation, facial recognition, chatbots, and other things that use deep learning inside. They're starting to rise now. Like Adlan, what do you think is happening now? Because a lot of these algorithms, tools, and technologies have been around, some since the 80s, but some have been around, you know, since 2012. Why is it all happening now in 2017, 18?
Because of the applications that we realize we can do with it. You know, we can do some crazy applications with deep learning now, and we don't have to wait for like 1 or 2 years to do them. So they have become extremely popular. You know, we can see, for example, the GANs that managed to create some fake images of a real-looking human person, or those computer vision applications that can detect any object in a video. So, you know, these are some very, very cool applications. And the other reason why it has become so popular is that it is being democratized. You know, thanks to all the open source platforms like GitHub, you can use the code, you can get the code, and as we show in our course, apply them very easily on your videos or on your applications to do these very cool applications, these very exciting applications. So that's why it's mainly thanks to the everything becoming open source and more easy to apply, because you know 4 or 5 years ago only the experts could use that. Only the expert had a good understanding of how it works and everything. And like, you know, it's like people had trouble at the beginning getting from old phones to smartphones, and now people 4 years ago had trouble getting on all these codes and all these models. But today, more and more people, even if they don't have any notion of coding, they manage to code and use the deep learning applications. However, that being said, I read some statistics about the models used in data science and companies or in general, and those deep learning models are still at the bottom of the ranking. The most used model in companies today are still logistic regression, random forest, XGBoost, decision trees, and the deep learning models like CNNs, RNNs, or GANs actually are still at the bottom of the list. But it is growing. It is growing definitely. However, Jeffrey Hinton has just issued a new paper on capsule networks. That if that works, if this can be implemented easily, and if it works fast enough, that could mark the end of the actual deep learning models, because this would be revolutionary. But we're not there yet. The implementation are very long to implement and execute. So we still have some time to realize that.
Okay. Yeah. No, I agree with those points. Capsule networks, definitely some interesting disruption that's coming our way. And you can tell about the importance of deep learning just by the number of students that sign up to our course. When did we release the deep learning course?
We released the deep learning course in last March, actually.
March, yeah?
March. And
so March. It's been like 9 months. And how many students signed up so far?
We have in total 65,000 students.
65,000 students just in that one course signed up.
That's
in 9 months.
Yeah.
That's quite insane. That's like 7,000 people per month signing up to that course alone, right? Is that right?
Yes, yes, absolutely.
It's like even hard to believe. That's showing that where the world's going. Like we can kind of get a sense for those things. And you know, before machine learning, and still machine learning is like very, very powerful. But now we're slowly going into the space of deep learning, because deep learning can solve any problem that machine learning can solve, but better. Better and more accurate.
Yes. However, for simple applications, the models like logistic regression and XGBoost will still stand above deep learning, because deep learning is not the fastest to execute. You know, you have to iterate over many epochs to train and to apply forward propagation and backward propagation many times to train your data. Whereas XGBoost, you just put the data as your input, and in a flashlight, it returns the output you want. So for simple applications, for simple problems, which can definitely give you some amazing insights for your company, well, I think the logistic regression models will still be among the first. So it's not like deep learning is going to erase the other ones. It's like it's going to make the other ones disappear. It's just that for the powerful applications that are very extremely demanding, well, deep learning will become the best models.
Gotcha. In very, very good points on that. Okay, so moving further, persistent growth of the Hadoop market. So what we are seeing is like Hadoop and any big data systems, for example, Spark, which is kind of the new thing out there. Remember, we were at ODSC, I think, and they mentioned Spark 2.0 came out. That was in May this year.
So
that was like a big new thing. And so why are these technologies, why is Hadoop and Spark, why are they becoming more and more prominent, and why are more and more companies going to them? What do you think?
Well, that's because the amount of data is considerably increasing, so you need systems like Hadoop, Spark, and Pigs and Hive to handle all this data, or to handle the big data systems, because otherwise it would be really slow to handle, and those systems are faster and faster to manage your data and to organize them and to leverage insights from them. So you definitely need those systems. And actually, I heard that, well, actually there's an important point to say about data science. It's that Python and R are still by far the softwares the most used in company to do data science or machine learning or deep learning. But then there is something growing up. It's called Scala, and it's based on those Hadoop systems to handle big data. That is growing because you need more and more powerful systems to handle bigger and bigger data. And that's why it's something definitely to consider. And actually, on LinkedIn, I see a lot of recruiters posts. And in these posts, I see the skills that are needed. And I see now, like almost all the time, besides Python or R, I see Hadoop, Spark, Hive, Pig, and Scala. And among all of them, if I had to recommend one, I would say Scala, because it's extremely powerful at handling big data.
Hmm. And also, I'd like to add that what we discussed before, deep learning and AI, are contributing a lot towards the rise of Hadoop and big data systems, because to train deep learning models and AI model and AI algorithms, you need a lot of data. You need that data to be stored somewhere. You need to be able to access it quickly. And so it's just natural that those two come in hand in hand, that the more the world turns to AI and deep learning, the more we'll see of big data systems such as Hadoop, Scala, Spark, and so on. That's and also a lot of it is going into the cloud. That's like a trend that we've seen in 2017, that it's not just big data, but it's also big data in the cloud. And the reason for that is the cutting of costs, right? Like if you have servers on your premises for a large organization, you know, that's one thing. Then you have servers, you need to scale them, you need to grow them, like you need to update them even, like as new technology comes out, as new hardware comes out, you need to update them. That's millions and millions of dollars, tens of millions of dollars, depending on the size of your organization, hundreds of millions of dollars for some organizations. Whereas if you have things on the cloud, less likely, or it's not as trusted yet by executives, especially old school executives who don't want to let go of the data. They don't want it to be somewhere else. They're worried about security and so on. But senses, it can be actually more secure. It's very easily accessible. And it's very easily scalable, and all the things can be updated very quickly. So you don't have to worry about updating your hardware. You can just click a button, and you know your hardware gets updated, or the team that's managing it, because now they have economies of scale. The company is managing it; they're doing it for many businesses. It's easier for them to upgrade their hardware, and also you just click a button, and it scales, and it scales, and it scales. And that's a huge thing, and that's why, like a lot of startups that are starting out, they don't even consider having their servers on premises. It's right away in the cloud. It's harder for companies that have been around for a while to, you know, make that move. But the ones that are doing it, those are the ones that are going to be ahead of the curve. My question to you, Adlan, is: are we going to make a course on big data one day?
Big data. Well, we're going to make a course on big data once Scala or any other system stands out, because right now it's not standing out that much. You know, it's like we still have Python and R, but as soon as like one of these big data system is the most used system in companies, and that can have some tremendous and powerful impacts on the company, we'll definitely make a course on that. And I did a lot of that, and when working in Google, I worked on a lot of big data systems, so I could share with you my experience and how this works. And we can definitely do it. What do you think?
I agree with that. I think the reason, because we've been asked by students quite a lot about this, I think the reason we haven't yet is because it's this industry is still very, I guess in early stages, it's very much forming. It's very much shaping up. Like Spark 2.0 came out like this year, in 2017, at the start of 2017. You constantly have new technologies, new versions come out, and so on. So, like, if we record a course today, 2 months from now, we'll need to re-record it. We'll need to update things and so on. So, it's a good point that we need to find out, like, as soon as there's a prominent market leader in that space, and we know where this whole thing is going, then we can give you a course and also help you understand for ourselves and help you guys understand where this whole thing is going and how to keep updated with these things. So it's definitely not in the pipeline yet, but it's in our vision in order to create this course sometime soon. By the way, but Adla, Leonid, our data science resident data scientist, asked me to make this little plug. So a little bit of advertising here. We don't have a course on big data, but we do have a series of tutorials which apparently are amazing on YouTube, which are about PySpark. So if you want to learn about PySpark, there's, you know, no cost involved. You don't have to purchase anything. Just subscribe to our YouTube channel. Make Leonid happy. Give him a Christmas present because he's in charge of our YouTube channel. And you'll also get updates about the PySpark series that we're releasing. And, you know, maybe that will be something that you're looking for. And also, of course, there's other things apart from big data that we talk about on the YouTube channel. Check it out. Okay. Any other comments on big data?
Yeah, well, PySpark is amazing. I really encourage students to subscribe to that channel because definitely, it's, you know, it's not like standing out. If it was standing out, we would make a course on it, but it's definitely useful. And yeah, so that's a great thing. That's amazing.
Awesome. Okay. We've already talked about AI. There's another side of things, which is applied AI, applying in different in space, in different areas. I think we'll skip that for now in this interest of time. Let's talk about data security. We talked about that. Oh, hold on. I'm completely mixing up these two, 2018 and 17. Okay. Digital twins. Interesting concept.
Digital twins. Yeah, I hear that more and more. So that's the Internet of Things, right? It's like that you are connected to your object and you can transfer some information between the digital twins and yourself. So that it can, you can use them in a better and better way. That's right.
Yeah. And it's not just like not for people. It's like an airplane will have a digital twin. Or an airplane engine will have a digital twin. And
that's right.
And there's like a data connection between them, or like a whole city. A whole city could have a digital twin, and you basically you can model different scenarios that can happen. In the city or in the turbine of an airplane by analyzing the way that the digital twin is behaving and putting like having the inputs from the actual object to the digital twin and also adding your own inputs. Or you could take the inputs from your digital twin object and then take inputs from your object to your digital twin and then also take inputs from like the other 100 airplane engines that you have in your company and, you know, compare to the average or tweak things and see like model scenarios. And so it's very useful for instance in things like airplanes, like for preventative maintenance, so you know when the issues might come up even way before they're going to come up. And, you know, of course cities to understand like behavior, social demographical things, and how, you know, transportation and things like that. So, you know, you can model traffic jams, like you have inputs. So for example, a city is growing, you constantly feed in inputs from all the sensors that you have in the city into that digital twin. And then you're like, oh, I wonder what would happen, you know, what will happen during, what's it called, Thanksgiving, when we block off these three roads. And because you have a digital twin, which is pretty much an identical copy of the city, you can actually block off the roads. This is my understanding of things. And then you see what happens to the traffic all over the city simply because you have been inputting those data points. The model, it's not just like a model that stores data points. It's actually a model that learns and how they behave, how they interact, and what the dependencies are in there.
That's right. Yeah. And there is another trend we haven't spoken about. At the beginning of this webinar, I said like the biggest trends that I'm most curious of, or that I see coming the most tremendous way, is, so we talked about blockchain, and then I don't remember if I said it, but the other one was augmented reality. We didn't spoke about this one, right? Yeah, that's right. And I heard that this could be the first like trend, the AI trend that could reach the $1 trillion market, augmented reality, mm-hmm. because it has tons of applications. And
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, but not that kind of applications, like long lasting time applications. And I heard this has huge potential. So that's definitely something to follow. What do you think? Do you think it could be reaching such a huge market?
Yeah, I definitely, like I heard that there's VR, virtual reality, but augmented reality is actually has the potential to be bigger. We saw initial attempts to at that with the Google Glass. That was like ages ago. What was it? 2015 or 11? No, or like
it's funny when I worked at Google, they actually introduced them, and I was there when it happened. So it was 2015. What did you say? 20?
I don't remember. 20 something.
quite recent. Yeah, it's definitely in the 21st century. Yeah.
And then you left Google, and the thing and the whole project fell apart.
That happens.
Augmented reality, it's an interesting one. It was funny to see how Pokemon Go just like boom and then gone. Like,
oh my goodness, so fast. Nobody, yes,
don't hear about it.
I'm not sure what the reason is exactly. I don't know, but it's crazy how this was like what we call these bubble trends, you know. You think it's a trend, you think it's growing, and at some point it bursts out and nobody hears about it anymore. Like Bitcoins, for example. I hear a debate on Bitcoins all the time right now, like every day, Bitcoin. The debate is whether it's a bubble. Do you think it's a bubble? Do you think it's not a bubble? It's based on blockchain technology, but still, it has all the signs of a bubble. So everybody's talking about this. What do you think? Do you think it's a bubble?
That's a good question. It really reminds me of how, like, you know, the first time Bitcoin really spiked, I think it was like 2014 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it just like went up, and then same people were like, no, it's going to keep going up forever. And then bam. So I don't think it's a fad. I don't think it's something that's going to go away. I think we will be using more and more cryptocurrency. I don't know, Bitcoin or others, but I don't know. I have doubts about it. It'll keep growing forever like that. I think that's a lot. Like, a lot of it is fueled by hype, by media and stuff like that. And, you know, as soon as something else, the next big thing comes along, I think there will be a correction. So, yeah, this is not financial advice, by the way, guys watching this webinar. Just our opinions.
Yes.
Okay. So we talked about digital twins. We talked about augmented reality. What do you think of self-serve analytics? Data science is growing, and, you know, let's get down to the basics, right? Let's forget about AI for now and stuff like that. So business intelligence, and we've got lots of different tools, lots of different approaches, and the amount of data, the volume of data, the velocity, variety, veracity, etc. of data is growing all the time and very quickly. So with that amount of data, organizations are slowly starting to realize that it's unsustainable to have only data scientists look into that data and pull the insights out. It's still very important to have data scientists, and more organizations are getting into that. But at the same time, what if everybody in your organization can look into data and get insights from it? And that is, at some extent, and that is self-serve analytics. What are your thoughts on the trends of self-serve analytics in 2018?
That's a very good question. Indeed, it's like what I said about the black box. You're absolutely right. Right now, only data scientists can leverage the data to gain some insights and help the decision-making and everything. And at the same time, we have those automated systems like this company Data Robot that basically makes some, as they call them, data robots that takes your data as input and will return the output without needing the work of a data scientist doing all the process of data and data analysis. And so I think, that's what I said at the beginning of this webinar. I think that it has the potential to be automated, like self-managed data systems. And it's actually going to come pretty quickly, I think, but it will not replace data scientists. We will always need data scientists to improve these systems, check these systems, control that they give the right insights, check if that makes sense, because sometimes the decisions can only be good decisions if you include the human factor. So we'll always need some people to have a complementary job on that, because the machines cannot do everything. So I think the self, as you call them, the self analyzing system. Sorry?
Self-serve analytics.
Self-serving analytics will grow, but will never like grow to the point that it will replace the data science jobs.
Okay. No, that's a good point. And a little bit of reassurance there. But I also, I agree with that. And I also think it's important for like those of you out there who are data scientists and who are aspiring data scientists, it's an important trend to keep in mind. It's been around for a while now, but it's going to be picking up more and more that people in organizations, regardless of their level, they're going to need to have some sort of data literacy. And it's your job, or you can make it your job as a data scientist to spread that, to create data advocates and to create people who are inspired, excited about data. It's going to make your job easier, because that way everybody, like people you talk to in the organization, they know about what you're doing. They know the value, the importance of data and data science, and that's cool. But also it's going to help the organization grow into that right direction. If you really care about the organization, I really hope you do, in the sense that you're working in a company that you love and that you believe in their mission. If you do, then that will be your contribution into putting them onto that right pathway, where not only you are doing the data science work, but everybody in the organization is contributing. Everybody can, you know, maybe like do a simple, some people can do a simple regression. Some people just can are better at understanding the different types of data. Some people have access to BI dashboards that you've created, and now instead of you redoing them every time, you've created them in an interactive way so that everybody can get their own insights. So it's an important trend for data scientists to consider, because one thing is just doing data science on your own and being the rock star. That's cool. Another whole big thing is about educating others in the space of data science. And at the end of the day, you'll help them out, not just in their roles, but also in personal growth, because that's where the world's going. You've got to be data literate to be to stay up to date with everything that's happening, and you know, like have other opportunities, have other, you know, like have a broad spectrum of ways you can develop your career. And speaking of not doing data by yourself, we had an interesting trend that we haven't talked about yet, and that is, where is it? Anyway, so the other trend is that companies are going to look more into not just hiring data science geniuses or wizards standalone, but actually building out data science teams. So slight difference there, but very important one at that. What do you think, Adlan? Why do you think companies are going to kind of steer away a little bit from just like a one super genius data scientist, but rather, that's cool, but how about we build a team of 5 or 10 that work together very well?
Because the goal in the end is to get as much people as possible on data and getting the skills to manage the data. It's what you said like a couple of minutes ago. Most people, to be able to leverage the data to gain some insights, as everybody is using a smartphone today. Everybody knows how to use a smartphone. We need everybody to know how to leverage data to gain some insights. And that's why I think they're making the teams. They don't want to leave that to the experts, because this is not democratization. If we leave that to the experts, we will miss out on a lot on other capabilities, because data science is not that hard. Everybody can do it. Everybody can apply the models. You just need to understand the intuition. And sometimes you don't even need to understand the intuition. You just need to understand how you have to get your inputs into the system and apply the models and gain your insight. So the data is becoming so abundant. Like data is everywhere. There is more and more data that, of course, we need more and more people. And the only way to get more and more people is to, instead of leaving that to the experts, building teams of many data scientists or many people that can at least do the basic stuff in data science, but gain some powerful insights.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree with that. And it's like when you have a team of people, right? You're gonna like one expert, that's awesome, but you're dependent on them, right? You're like, if they leave or if they decide to do certain things a certain way rather than exploring other possibilities, other tools, you'll be very dependent on that kind of stuff. And I think your opinion here is very, people watching this or listening to this should, you guys really should listen to Adlan on this, because you've worked in data science teams, right? You've been in like in Google, in your other jobs that you've been in, like I've been in this situation where I was the one data scientist and I was like doing all the things. And from that, I can talk, speak to, yes, I try to do my best and my like in good faith and do really amazing work as much as I could. But at the same time, it was very highly dependent on my subjective opinions, on my subjective ways I think the company should go and do things. And, you know, that might be wrong, might be right. But again, you don't want a large organization depending entirely on the opinion of one person. And so I think what you said is valid here. And the other thing that pops to mind is executives. So let's talk about executives for a bit. There's two sub-trends in the trend for executives that I see. We've got more and more organizations hiring CDOs, chief data officers. And the other one is that more and more executives are like chief executive officers, like the guys that are the directors, the heads of the companies. They are looking into getting educated in the space of data science, right? Like, it's not their job to be data scientists, but they want to find out more about algorithms, about applications, about AI, deep learning, about all these different things, data science related, to not become technological or data science dinosaurs, so that they can see what this is all about. Like, what are your thoughts on that, Adlan? Like, why do you think more and more executives are jumping on board with this trend? And do you think it's necessary?
Of course, that's 100% necessary. And the simple reason for this is that the executives are the one who makes the decision. They are the one to take the decision. They are the one to decide the next move on the company. And since data science is so powerful at leveraging the data to get the right insights that will help in a significant way to take the right decision, well, executives definitely need to be connected to data science, not necessarily be expert, but to be connected to data science to understand and be convinced how data science can help them make the right decision. And I say that not only on the logical point of view, I also say that based on experiments. I had on the phone a lot of executives that asked me for some advice on how they would leverage data science to take decisions. They said mostly that the problem was that there is a huge pyramid between them and the data scientists. So they're far from the data science teams, and therefore they need some better and better data visualization tools to understand how the data is leveraged to and the insights are extracted to help them take the right decisions. And so the executives want to get more and more into data science, and they actually need it for the simple reason that they're the one making the decision, and data science is so powerful at helping them into taking the right decision.
Interesting. And so let's talk about like decisions, because let's talk about strategy, because decisions, they link up into strategy. What are your thoughts on data strategy for large organizations? Like, is that a thing? Is it important for organizations not just to think through their, I don't know, marketing strategy, or let's say operations strategy, growth, expansion, and so on? Do you think that executives should be thinking about data strategy, and what does that mean? What does it mean to think about data strategy?
If you talk about strategy, I think strategy has a lot to do with intuition as well. It has a lot to do with intuition, experience, and not only data. Data can help in the strategy, because in the strategy you have to take some decisions, and data helps in taking the right decision. But there is so much more than decisions in strategy. It's a combination of things that it's pretty complex, by the way. But you also need a lot the intuition, and I think the intuition is like the opposite of data, and that's why data will never replace everything, because you will always need the intuition, and you mostly need the intuition in strategy. So that's a very interesting question, actually, which I think the answer is that data is not everything for strategy.
No, yeah, I agree. But like what I'm referring to is data is not everything for strategy. Totally agree. But in the sense that, let's say we have strategy overall, but then inside strategy, we have everything to do with data. Like, you know, the tools that we're going to use. Are we going to install Hadoop or are we not going to install? Are we going to go to the cloud or are we not going to go to the cloud? What else can be in there? You know, like those areas, like how do we add more data points? Do we have enough data points, points about our customers? Do we need more inputs? Do we need more unstructured data? Do we need to handle unstructured? What insights can we gather from our data? Or what is our current data saying about where our organization is going? And how can we leverage that more? How can we implement deep learning or AI algorithms and so on? So that's the stuff I mean for data strategy, or like the strategy around data. Yeah, so I think it's quite important for organizations to start keeping that in mind, because otherwise it's just going to happen on its own the way it happens, and that might be a bit reactive rather than proactive. Data strategy helps you be proactive in the sense, it's really hard to be proactive from the first place because there's so many technologies that are coming out you don't even know about that is going to come out like next year or a few months down the track. But at least you put an effort to be on top of your own organization. You know your pitfalls and you know where you need to patch things up. You know where you're not keeping up to speed with everything that's going on in your organization in sense of data. But like if you don't even think through data strategy, that leaves you way behind everybody else. And I think that takes away a huge competitive advantage from companies.
Yes, and I'm reading something interesting here. So I'm going to read that to you. According to Gartner, 59% of organizations are still building their enterprise AI strategies, while the remaining 41% of the organizations have already made the plunge. So yeah, there is definitely something happening with AI strategies for companies right now. 59% is a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they're at least thinking through how they're going to
leverage AI for strategy.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, so very cool stuff. Very cool stuff. What else? Do you have anything else that we have missed?
No, I have mentioned all the trends I wanted to speak about. And the ones that I'm very curious and that I will be following very closely for the next year in 2018 will be blockchain and maybe augmented reality.
Nice. Yeah, and for me, probably blockchain. Definitely want to get deep into that topic and understand a bit more about blockchain and what's going on there, and how like we can apply it in the world, how it's going to be transformative. And I think AI, I'll be interested to see how that goes, and how more, I would say more deep learning. I would say less AI for me, more kind of deep learning. Understand, it's kind of more basic than AI. But it's at least, like I like the concept of narrow applications. So rather than having some like broad, some like, okay, there's a problem, let's apply deep learning, let's solve it. That's pretty cool. Okay, so we're kind of running out of time. So yeah, I think that's all the trends that we've covered up. Yeah, I think it was pretty cool. Thanks a lot, guys, for coming on the show, on the webinar.
Thank you so much, guys. That was my first webinar, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right. Take care, guys, and hopefully you'll have more of these. We'll see these coming up more. And yeah, have good luck in 2018. Okay, let's stay in touch.
Yes. Keep up the good work.
All right. See you, man.
See ya.
There we go. Those were the trends for 2018 that we were able to identify. Of course, some of them will happen, some of them will happen less, but overall, those are the most exciting things to look out for in this coming year. Which was your favorite trend? Which is the one that you're most excited about, the one that you're looking into the most? Personally, for me, I like the concept of anything to do with AI and digital twins and security as well, but the one I'm most curious about is blockchain. I have like this little project that of my own that going on that I'm learning about blockchain. I want to learn more and more about blockchain. I want to find out how it works, what exactly goes into it, what the security encryption and other implications are, and what are the use cases and so on. So definitely that's the one for me. But again, yours might be a bit different. In any case, I hope you enjoyed these trends and now you know what to look out for in 2018. If you know somebody in the space of data science that could benefit from this episode, then forward it to them and help them also get prepared. And maybe you'll have something to discuss and debate after they've listened or watched, because this episode is available in video mode, and you'll have something to discuss with them. Once again, you can get all the links from this episode and the show notes at www.superdatascience.com/119. There you can also find the video recording. And on that note, thank you so much for being here. I can't wait to see you back here again soon. And until then, happy analyzing.